If you're like me, you need to stay on top of what's working in events today. Whether it's your first time or you've been doing events for years, we don't want to repeat the mistakes of the past. We want to know what's working today. And to that end, I encourage you to check out Bold Push Plus. It's brought to you by Julius Solaris. He is one of the top voices and researchers in the events industry. Go to filmrashawn.com/boldpush, and that'll take you to a page that tells you more about it, and you can apply. If you would, put the name Phil and who referred you. That'll give me a little bit of money to keep this show going. Now back to the show.
Welcome to the Events Innovator Show, where we explore the ideas and strategies that are transforming events. Get ready to unlock the secrets to creating extraordinary experiences. And now, here's your host, Phil Michon.
Hey, everybody. I'm excited for this upcoming episode with JC Haidt. JC is a friend. I met him in Cancun last year at a conference he put on for agencies called the Commitment Summit. Later in the year, he told me he was going to start a new event called Scale with Stability. And I advised him on a number of occasions, and he built something that I think was very interesting and very relevant. And you're going to enjoy hearing about his journey and some of the things he learned, both good and bad. He's completely honest in this interview. Do me two favors. One is, could you go wherever you listen to podcasts and rate this? And then also, if you're interested, join my mailing list at filmrashawn.com, and you're going to be able to get on an email list, learn about podcast episodes when they come out, get some tips from me on events, and it's going to be the way to stay in touch with everything that's going on. Appreciate you. Here is this week's interview. Welcome, everybody. I'm so excited about today's conversation. We're going to go deep into an event that just happened last month, and it's an event that's been in formation for a few months. I got to watch from the outside as this event was in the pre-stage. I watched from a distance as it happened, and now we're going to have a conversation about it. I'm here with my friend, JC Haidt. He's the founder of Haidt, a company that helps companies scale with stability. So welcome to the show, JC.
What's up, Phil? I'm super pumped to be here. Excited to have the conversation. It's been a roller coaster of thoughts and ideas, and excited to unhinge them for you and with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe different from some of those who are listening, JC does have a background where he's done some smaller events, but he's never done an event of this magnitude. So JC, yeah. Back up to when you got the idea for this event and what was going through your mind of why it was needed.
Yeah. So as you said, we've had for several years now the Commitment Summit. And although financially it's a pretty large event because it's all VIP, it's really expensive and a lot of people can't come to those. And so for the Commitment Summit, which happens every July or in a few months, you know, it's $6,000 to $8,000 just for the ticket. That's what we charge. We bring in 100 people or so. And we kept having this question of like more people like, man, I just can't travel overseas or it's too expensive or all this good stuff. And we've been dreaming of having a more affordable event that still kept those values and the culture that we wanted to do inside the US. And so Karen and I have been thinking and praying on this. We're going, okay, what does this look like? How does it look like? What is even our target market anymore? Is that shifting? And, you know, it actually happened, you know, Phil, and I don't know how much you know about this story, but because you've been kind of in that journey with me the whole time, but at the same time of this thought process, I was sitting with one of the presidents of a faith-based university that I'm very passionate about. And they were talking about growth and what does it look like in the future and all this stuff. And, you know, what are ways they can grow and how can they innovate? And I had the idea. I was like, well, what about throwing a big business conference? Like most of your donors are business people that have graduated and went off. Like most of your funding and all this stuff is business. Like, what if we had a big business conference and it was self-sustainable and you sold tickets and like you made it this big thing and you brought in speaker, you know, like. And he was like, that'd be amazing. And then he was like, who would run it? And then I was like, I don't know. And then he was like, well, you do events. Could you do something like this? And then it kind of started to click, like, this is actually what I've been wanting to do the whole time. I just haven't had a framework. And so we decided to start looking at what. That pushes forward at the same time. On the flip side, supporting a faith-based university that I'm really passionate about. So,
all right. I'm going to have you repeat what you just said because you froze on me and I'm not sure if the recording is going to capture it. So you were saying that you had the conversation with the university president and you had this aha moment where it clicked and he had asked you who could produce it. You said, oh, this is what I've always wanted to do. Now complete the thought, what you said after that.
Yeah, we're sitting there and he's, you know, hey, would you run this event? And then it kind of clicked, right? It clicked like, yeah, I've been wanting to run an event. I've been looking for kind of what that looks like. I've been looking for the target audience. And here he has an audience, a venue, an event. And so we very quickly kind of put this together and said, you know, I'll try this out. And so we were basically had the idea of can't the mission was, and this is a difficult thing with events. Can we create a self-sustaining event that does two things, serves my audience, is great for, you know, business people, allows us to build the stage that we want. And at the same time on the back end, be a resource, a marketing platform, a branding platform for this university that I'm very passionate about. Right. And we'll go through all the details of that path, obviously on this call, but I'm sitting here at the back end going, we did it. Like we figured it out. And I think we're onto something really exciting and special.
So just for perspective, when did that conversation happen?
Yeah. So that conversation would have been in October of, what is that, 2024? And then we built the website basically that next, you know, early that next month, and then started launching tickets and doing Facebook ads and so on and so forth. And then we, Black Friday, we kind of did a big push and said, hey, we're doing this new thing, sign up, 50% off early bird. And then the rest is history. April, we had the event. So, excuse me, it's not October. It was the month September. So September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April. So 8 months from not having a logo in a room thinking of an idea to having 750 registered people sign up for the event.
And you know, from point of inception to point of marketing, how long was that period?
We probably spent about 30 days to like the landing page, the game plan, you know, things of that nature. Yeah.
All right. So one of the things I'm passionate about as I talk to events is getting really crystal clear on your strategy. Who is the ideal person coming to this event? What are the outcomes that you're going to try to drive? Because I think those have to be answered, in my opinion, before you start creating budgets, before you start creating websites and all that kind of stuff. You came to some of those conclusions pretty fast, I think. Walk me through the process that you went through from, oh, this is a good idea to, okay, I've got a website. What were the things you were thinking about? Because you may have gone through a different grid than what I did.
Just a quick pattern interrupt. We had an internet outage in the middle of our interview. So we're going to pick it back up. It's not going to be a smooth transition, but you'll be able to get the gist. Here's more with JC Height.
All right. So you decided you're going to do this event. You made that decision and you've got kind of two different reasons for doing it. You said there's about a 30-day gap from, yes, we're going to do it, to website is launched. Walk me through some of the strategic decisions that you made from, oh, I think this is a good idea, to, I know who I'm targeting. I know what the outcomes that they want, that I want, that the school wants. What process did you go through there? I know you're like a fast decision maker, but slow it down and help me understand what you decided so that you would know if you succeeded or not, and you would know how to position that website.
So first off, I think that's a good, just because I did it doesn't mean it's the right way, right? I'm a ready, shoot, aim, you know, type of guy. It goes fast. And so like, absolutely. So what I looked at was I had been thinking about our audience for a long time. So when I say a month, it was like, I'm a visionary like you are, Phil. Like I'm thinking about these things in the shadow, I mean, for years, right? And we really wanted to hone in our audience to faith-based CEOs. men and women of faith that wanted to scale the business, but didn't want to forsake their marriage and their kids and their church life and things like this. And the question was remained of like, you know, is that too broad still? Is that, you know, like who's going to want that? Who's going to not want that? Is it like, you know, we just kind of took a leap of faith there. Here's what we knew. We felt very confident that by partnering with university, we had some strategic advantages that most event holders didn't have. So I was going into the fight, you know, not knowing if I could win. You know, I was on steroids in a couple of areas. Number one, because I had it at a university, my AV cost was essentially nothing. Mm-hmm. That's a huge element for a 1,000-person or a 700-person event. Like normally events, anywhere from 50 to 100 to whatever amount more you can dream of. I mean, AV is really expensive. We didn't pay anything.
Yep. 200 to 500,000 is my experience when you get past 1,000 people.
That's right. So mine, I think I ended up paying 15 grand because we wanted some sparklers and some food. Well, normally in an event, for any meal you provide, you're going to be paying $50 to $100 a meal. 50 is cheap. 50 is like sandwiches in a box, right? But because we held it at a university, we just paid what the students paid. And they had really good food for the students already prepped. And we had some like catered meals as well. But like our costs were up. I mean, I think our VIP private lunches were like 15 bucks, right? So again, dramatic strategic advantage. So we made the decision that instead of making it like, oh, our costs are less, let's lower our price. We actually decided to filter by price. We kept our price up. Our lowest ticket, $750, discounted to $750. Instead, we decided to invest this in experience. And we specifically did that on speakers, right? We spent a lot of money on speakers this year. One, we set a stage, you know, but it was tough. Like, we didn't have any connections. We had just moved to Arkansas, so it was a new state. I wasn't like an active alumni necessarily that I was like, you know, involved in all the alumni groups that I could pull from. You know, all of our work in the past had been around agencies and growth there. You know, our events were around agencies. So it was very difficult. But that's where my marketing background kicked in, right? Like, we manage millions of dollars in marketing funds for hundreds of companies. Like, I know how to market really, really well. And so,
let me back you up for a second. I have one really curious question. That is, how much was coffee on the campus? Cause that's like one of the biggest surprises to people at venues. Do you know how much it was a gallon?
You're picking at my failures here, Phil. So foolishly, and I'm even embarrassed to say this, but you'll know, on day two, we'll probably come back to this later in the conversation. I, at the end of day two in a VIP session, so my VIP ticket holders are all sitting there. I think we had just got done talking with Damon John. I get up, and I'm going to recommend this to all event producers. I got up in front of all my VIPs in a room, 150 VIPs, and said, hey, this is day two. What do we do wrong? Right? Like, I'm already planning for next year. I already see things like in front of everyone. Tell me what we did wrong.
No.
One of the first ones was like, you don't have coffee. And I was like, I don't drink coffee. And then I was just like, why don't I have coffee? This is so stupid. What we did was we had a sponsor, like a big coffee supplier. Hey, we'd love to do coffee. Can we have a booth with coffee? And I was like, sure. Yeah. Then anybody can wants coffee can go to that booth. Yeah. Can we have it like free until 10? And then after that we charge. Yeah. I don't care. Sure. Oops. And we didn't have coffee. And so I don't know how much coffee charged, but I can look that up pretty quick.
No, that's actually a better lesson. You know, a lot of times it's $100 plus a gallon. I'm guessing on the campus there, it was a lot less than that, but that was my curiosity.
I think it's like 20 bucks is what I think.
Yeah. Which every one of us who's an event organizer would die for that. We could get very creative at 20 bucks a gallon. Here's another question. Cause in my recollection, when you first launched your marketing, you were not crystal clear that this was only for faith-based businesses. And
that's true.
You gained that clarity at some point. What happened that gave you that clarity?
Yeah, it's a great point. And you're now bringing back some of these memories. So your memory is really good. When we first launched, we said Scale with Stability Summit. And that was it. We just focused on the brand. And like when someone asked, we would talk through like what that meant to us, which for me was, I want to scale and remain stable in my marriage, remain stable in my relationship with my children, and remain stable in my faith. Not stable in the business. Business is really tough. Stability doesn't exist in a business. And I had a few friends. I was just going around to my mentors. And I just really felt called. Like, I don't know. I think sometimes business owners, we just kind of have this like gut feeling. And I was like, I feel like I need to put it on. With the commitment summit, because we only bring 100 and there's $8,000. It's an application, right? Like every single person that comes to TCS meets with my wife before they can buy a ticket. Literally everyone. You can't buy it on the line. And so we're able to tell them, like, here's who we are. Here's what we're about. You know, like we talk about Jesus quite a bit. You know, it doesn't mean you got to be good with Jesus, but you got to be okay with it. With Scale with Stability Summit, I wasn't going to be able to do that. We were going to bring 1,000 people. I wasn't going to talk to everyone. And so I felt the need to say, hey, here's who we are and what we're about. So we changed the title, Scale with Stability Summit, a faith-based business conference for entrepreneurs and CEOs, right? And so for entrepreneurs and business leaders. And so we made that position. I think it's so important. What's the quote by Henry Ford? If I asked everyone what they wanted, they would have asked for a faster horse. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Something of that nature, right? Like my first two calls to sponsors after I changed that, both backed out of sponsorship.
Okay.
And which is fine. But they did, right? And like my gut was crap. They don't want that. I need to switch. And thank God I didn't switch, because at the end of the day, I'm going to be that person from stage. And so let me just own it. And if they don't show up, I'd rather them not show up than show up and be pissed, you know, type of thing. Right. So we made the decision, we changed it. And it worked out really, really well. And I think it gave us more of an identity, more honed into who our audience was as well. So.
Yeah. All right. So let's step back with your visionary hat on. And
Okay.
now you're envisioning the time we're in now, like we're 3 or 4 weeks after your event when we're having this conversation, and you're envisioning success. How are you going to measure if the event succeeded? What were the things? Obviously, dollars and cents, but what other things were you going to measure to tell you if you succeeded?
Yeah, as you just said, my number one goal was to not lose money on the event. That was everything driving. My next goal was re-signups. You know, like I knew that if people had a good experience, they'd sign up for next year. If my sponsors had a good experience, they'd sign up for next year. You know, obviously we haven't re-signed all sponsors, but it looks like everyone that gave me a check last year is giving me a check this year. In fact, everyone who's already signed has literally 100% of the sponsors that have re-signed have increased what they're doing with us next year. And so for me, that is the end result every event holder wants to see. From the event, we offer tickets on day two imperfectly. We got 60% of our VIP tickets sold out. Again, we only have 110. We only have space for 110 in our VIP. It's like a big, nice chapel that overlooks the courtyard. We only have 110. So that's our max. We sold 60% of those. We sold 30% of the mezzanine, which is the cheaper tickets we introduced this year, which is like balcony tickets. And that I think ultimately is the, you know, the sign of success with any given event is how many people are want to do more with you, right?
That's a sign that something good happened. But if I put my hat on and I'm an attendee coming to this event, I'm expecting some kind of deliverable before next year's event. What kinds of things have you been hearing happened for your attendees who are at the event, whether VIPs or the broader attendee group?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, probably two sets of responses. We've done tons of surveys with people, both at the event, after the event, and then we had our customer experience team, literally like every person that didn't do a survey or did, both they're reaching out to jump on a call. What did you learn? What did you do? Can I connect you with anyone? All that good stuff, right? And hands down, I think there's two segments. So the smaller folks, just the resounding like, the possibilities, you know, like I want to do more. I've realized like all these jokers on the stage that are big started exactly where I'm at. Like, you know, this events do that to you. They motivate you and empower you to reach impossible, right? We have Damon John, we had Kevin Harrington, we had Willie and Corey Robertson, who actually went to Harding University, by the way. And like, all these jokers are just like them, right? Okay. The second thing is that we were very intentional with our networking and bringing our, both a win and a loss, our VIP attendees. We were very good and intentional about bringing them together and integrating them with our biggest speakers. So like, not only did they have a, an opportunity to take a photo op with every VIP speaker, we also had a Q&A session privately with our VIPs, right? And that was like really cool, which means every single attendee, if they wanted, every single VIP, if they wanted to ask Dr. Chapman a question, they could. We did not hold out. If every single VIP wanted to ask Damon John a question about investing and whatever, they had that opportunity. And so I'm circling, you know, the fence here a little bit, but we went all into that experience, you know, at that level.
But then you said that you had a miss. So I'm assuming that that's for the lower ticket price. Maybe there was
that's
a miss,
right,
on networking.
That's right. Oh man, we missed the ball there. Also, you know, this all a CEO's ability to be one with fault, I think, is such an advantage in business. And to just be like, I'm imperfect, tell me what I did wrong. Sitting up there in front of those VIPs, and we probably were up there like 40 minutes, and them telling me things that they thought we could do better in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It made them a part of next year's already. It was a genuine ask, right? And there were so many great things, but somebody also, and they were like, hey, my buddy is in general admission ticket, and there's like not a lot of networking opportunities. And I was like, actually, there's no networking opportunities for them. None. Like, they have a cafeteria open, but it's like literally the entire cafeteria for the entire university. Go sit wherever you want versus like a dedicated spot in the back, right? Yeah. Like, there wasn't anything, like everything. And so, man, what a big miss. What a big miss. And I think as like event holders, as CEOs, as business leaders, when we just own that and then like, cool, next year, boom, here's the checklist and already start planning it, like that's a huge opportunity. So often we're like, oh, that was a mistake. How can we hide it? How can we cover it up? How can we, like, we just threw it out there, right? Our app sucked. We bought this really expensive app, and I won't name them out here publicly, but like, I've never asked for a refund. I don't think I've ever asked for a refund in my life. And I was like, guys, you need to give a refund. This negatively impacted my event in a huge way because everyone was trying and it didn't work. So at the end of day one, I just told everyone on stage, like, dump the app. We've rebuilt a landing page with every bit of the information you have to have. Here's the landing page link. It's got all the directions and the map and the course and the food and everything. Like, just use that. And so it was another big miss for us, you know, big miss.
I love though what you just said, because every event needs to be ready to pivot when something doesn't go the way you thought it was going to go. And I love that you were ready, even if you didn't have the plan in place, your team was ready to go solve it.
Yeah. And they built that landing page without me even knowing it. Right. So you get the right team on the, you know, in the boat. Right. And guys, the client is everything. When there's a need, we fill it. I don't care how tired, I don't care how hard, I don't care how, like, find the solution. The one problem that I mentioned, the coffee problem, as soon as they said that, I literally walked out, went downstairs and said, hey, how do we get coffee everywhere? And then I remember to have a contract with a sponsor that's supposed to provide it. And I felt so miserable and I was conflicted there. My commitment to my sponsor outweighed. And I just explained that to everyone the next day at the VIP lunch. I was like, hey guys, I want to go get coffee, but we have a sponsor. Go down and support those jokers next year. It's on me. It's going to be a part of it. Right. So
yeah,
you live and learn, right?
Well, and back to the fact that you missed the general attendees on the networking perspective. I've seen that happen a lot at events. The VIPs get that white glove, the general attendees don't. And that's one of the most awkward things. If you're going to an event and you're an introvert or you don't know anybody, and then they just leave you in this large pool to go figure it out, that can be super awkward. So I'm just highlighting to other event organizers, figure that out, because the two reasons people come to an event is one, that content, that inspiration, those lessons that they can learn. And then second is the connections they can make. And sometimes that's inverted, that they came for
the I would argue, Phil, that the reason they return is the connections. They can learn anything, anywhere. Like, no one is like, again, learning is good. And that's probably the logical reason why they justified spending the money.
Yes.
Come back because of the connections and the feeling they have.
Yeah. Now I think that's everywhere. And since the pandemic, the connections is even more important, because you can learn on YouTube and take courses out the wazoo to learn techniques, to get the inspiration that you talked about and be able to sit in a room with Damon John or something like that. That's, something you can't price. And even like my friend Paul White, who was a speaker, he told me that was the highlight for him, was being in the room and watching that kind of thing happen. So
yeah,
I want to ask about that, because when I first watched what you were doing with spending so much money on getting these big name people, I was wondering, is that going to pay off from a marketing standpoint and a delivery standpoint? And you did, you bet the farm on that. And we won't talk numbers, but that was something you were convinced of. Talk me through why you made that decision. And then secondly, do you think it paid off?
Yeah, great question. And it's a constant question with my team. And I often ask, like, I like to think deeper than just like, what's my answer? Like, is this answer driven by JC's ego? Or is this answer driven by like logic or, the reality is that if you ask my people, like if you ask attendees who their favorite was, it was like four or five folks that came for free that are my friends that are great speakers. Mm. It's the lower, they get the sex appeal of the big ones is cool. Don't get me wrong, but here's why I do it. I do it for two reasons. I do it for a couple of reasons. One, the number one reason is I want to build relationships with the smartest, biggest business people in the world. To this day, if I have a big need, I can text John Maxwell. Mm. And the reason I can text John Maxwell and you can't is because at one point I paid John Maxwell a lot of money to come to an event. And then I paid him for another one. And I honored his value as a human being and where he's built his value, right, to come in. So it's not just I'm using the event as a way for JC to build my network. Mm. That makes sense?
Yep.
The other side of this is I'm more interested in my event is a branding tool, not necessarily profitability. Now, scale and stability, we have found a way to create a profitable. Like I think we can profit very well off the event itself, which for most events, very rarely are people profitable. And so they have to make money on the back end. They got to sell hard, right? I don't want to have that pressure of selling on the back end. I want to just focus on like Scale with Stability Summit, Phil. I don't even know if you knew this. High Level had a booth and I had two nonprofits with a booth.
That's it.
There was no other booths at my organization.
Wow.
Which is like it wasn't just a big sales organization, right? Like it wasn't just like, okay, all these people trying to sell. It was all about the Knowledge Education Network. Okay, let's circle it back. With the event with TCS, for example, I'm okay losing 50, 100, 250,000, right? Which is my speaker budget. The reason is, again, is because I'm using that as a branding tool, right? Not only do I functionally get a call, Damon John, whenever I get to say, hey, here's me with Damon, it's just there's a branding aspect of that. And this is where that ego kicks in of like, honestly, it's hard to know the difference. But like when I go out to speak at events and they go to my Instagram and they see that I have a lot of conversations with some really cool people, does that increase my chances of them wanting to work with me or decrease? Does that add to my authority or does that decrease my authority? And so I use these events as a marketing tool. Instead of spending $50,000 on PPC, I'll spend $1 million on an event, lose 50 grand, but it's that much larger of an experience, right? And so, yeah. So back to the celebrities, I think it's worth it. I drive down that. Sometimes it gets a little confusing when like everyone's like, oh, this person was my favorite versus this one. But the reality is that in today's world, we're a world of eyes. and eyeballs. And the more friends you know with millions of followers that you can partner with, connect with, endorse you in different things, it's a strategic advantage.
That's an interesting point, because the branding for you outweighs the immediate marketing effect, because maybe those people don't sell tickets this year, but it increases your authority is what I'm hearing you say.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. I played a long tail game, right? And, you know, I have that advantage now, right? Like if I had a good product or a good business right now that I wanted an investor in that I thought could, like, I mean, I can probably make 3 phone calls and be on Shark Tank next season if I want to, because I've worked with several of those guys, right? I can make a call if I ever needed a job or needed a thing to John Maxwell or to Jesse Isler. It's because I've brought them to my events. We built a relationship. Dr., you know, Paul White, you know, like bringing him into my circle. Now we're connected. Dr. Gary Chapman, right? Like, I am a big fan of working with some of the biggest names and brands. You know, we just signed Ann Byler. She's not a, you probably, do you know who Ann is? Byler? Probably not. Do you know who Annie Ann's is? The pretzel?
Sure.
She's the founder, right? Okay. So I'm not just focused on like the name that you would recognize, but like, I want to be around men and women that have done stupid big things and I want to pay them to come so I can learn off of them, so I can build that relationship with them, right?
I think the difference that I see of what you're doing with those names and celebrities is they are relevant to your event, as opposed to, you know, you see the events where they brought Magic Johnson in or someone like that, or, you know, the Obamas or someone that, and I've been to the events where they've got some of these big names, Martha Stewart or Serena Williams or whatever, and the benefit is very minimal. It's like, it's cool that they were there, but they didn't figure out how to leverage that person to connect with the audience needs. I think you have, and I'm going to tell a story about TCS. You had Daryl Eves there. I know Daryl. I've known him for a long time because he's spoken at events that I am part of, and I've seen him speak at other events. But the biggest advantage, I stood in line. I don't know if you know this. I stood in line to talk to him after his session, missed the networking event that I really wanted to be at. I was second from the last person in line. Someone came up after me. I was the last person for a long time. And then someone came up and wanted to go after me. But what he said to me was life-changing. It was worth the trip. So not only are you doing what you described, when you place those people in the room, they have something to offer that, because of their experience and background, that someone who hasn't been through the fires they've been through can't deliver on. And maybe they don't do that for everyone. I'm a big fan of the principle, do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. And if each one of those speakers did that, the ripple effect that has on the whole event is profound. And those people are going to be your word of mouth, you know, champions saying, you got to come to this event because of this story. And so that has this profound effect. So I think if you have the right people there, it's worth doing it. In my opinion, if they're the wrong fit, they don't serve the purpose that you have.
Yeah,
maybe it does the branding thing and that's cool, but the people in the room don't end up caring.
You agree? Oh, absolutely. I mean, like, you know, we got to look at this stuff very strategically, right? So one, do I have the money to waste on celebrity, right? And, you know, if it's yes, then cool, power to you, do whatever crap you want, right? Okay, no, I don't. Okay, well, what is, it's either, in my mind, it has to do two things. Number one, I don't hire a celebrity unless they help me sell tickets. And by help, I mean like use their face in an ad, or because I'm using their face, I know, bottom line, I can find a lot of incredible speakers that can crush the stage. Now, another one of my strategies, Phil, and I don't know how you, maybe you disagree with this. My strategy has always been start at the top. So for Scale Stability Summit 2026, right? I've already got, it looks like, my 4 big speakers locked in, Lord willing, you know, whatever. They're not locked in. So I'm going to tell you who they are and just be clear. They're not locked in. That way I don't get in trouble. But I'm working right now on John Maxwell, Robert Herjavec, Daryl Eves is coming to that one, as well as Ann Byler, the founder of Annie Ann's. So one of the things that I've done on my strategy is I go, hey, who are the big names? And then I go to that next class of speakers, the speakers in the 15 to 40 grand range, normally is what they charge. And I go, hey, would you like to speak right in front of John Maxwell? Mm. I don't have any money. I've already spent my budget. You, all of those 15 to 40 grand people are like, yeah, I'll be on that stage right before him, right before Robert Urshman, right before, you know what I mean? And so I leverage the big names and that showcases the stage and then I funnel down from there, right? And I end up, you know, where some people will spend, you know, 10 grand across 10 speakers, you know, 100 grand across 10 speakers, I'm spending 100 grand, but it's because I'm getting John at 100 or 150 or 200 or whatever his number is, and then everything cascades. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Right.
So the people in the room see the value even as a speaker to be there is what you're saying.
There you go. That's right. That's right. But the speakers, we care a lot about that. You know, I'm speaking on a lot of stages, you know, four or five a month now. And I always look at the other speakers. Who am I on stage with? You know, what's the room, you know, look like, right? Who, you know, oh, this is good enough for Jesse Itzler to go to. Then it's good enough for me to go to. Let's go. You know, I have an opportunity to maybe be behind stage with him. That's worth something, you know? And then it all compounds, right? So what I did, you know, Willie and Corey were coming and then I pitched to Willie. I was like, hey, I know you're filming Duck Dynasty. What would it look like for you to like bring the crew and film Duck Dynasty at our event? And I was like, this is a long shot. They sure did. They brought their entire A&E, whatever it is, like they're filming the freaking deal, right? And wow. And so then what did I do? Well, Duck Dynasty is going to be there. Willie and Corey filming all this stuff that's coming. So I called the governor's office. Governor, Willie and Corey coming. I think we should give them the Arkansas Travelers Award. Like, we need to give them award as like official. She loved it. She's a huge fan of Duck Dynasty. So she came. And oh, by the way, she brought her son. So now mom's the hero because she's introducing her son to Willie Robertson from Duck Dynasty, right? And so I'm leveraging these like bigger names and I'm going out and going, okay, how can I create wins in my community, for my city, for the university, for whatever, you know, around that can help as well.
That's right? Amazing. Thank you for walking me through that. No, I'm sorry. Something else.
So an example, let's just say I want to create an event and just make up an industry, roofing industry. And I know there's a big strategic partner, man. If I can get SRS, this big distributor for roofing, man, if I can get them behind my event, where not only will they sponsor, they'll also market to their millions of people. That would be huge for me. Well, why don't you call the CEO of SRS and ask him who he would like to meet? Or better yet, just call him up and say, hey, I've got these five or six people I'm thinking about bringing my event. I also were really thinking about you coming. Who would you want to meet out of these four people? Mm. Oh, dude, I would definitely love to meet Willie Robertson or Damon John or John Maxwell. Cool. Glad you said that. And then boom, now I'm creating these multiple wins, right?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I want to go to something else you said. And you had the VIPs in the room and you're asking them, what could I do better? I also assume you asked them, what did you like? So what's something that surprised you on both sides of that question that they said?
I actually didn't. Okay. In fact, a couple times where people started to say what they're like, and I said, sorry, I don't have time for the likes right now. I want the losses. And okay. All right. I was like, you'll tell me the wins later, post it on Facebook, like whatever. That's for the world to see. We're in an inner circle. Let's get real and let's talk about how we get better, because ultimately that's what every one of you are here to do, is to get better. And so, I reframed it and tried to, I mean, there was some very kind people. They were very gracious. Sure. No one was like, this sucks, you need to change it. Like, everyone, you know, sandwiched their complaint with some positivity. Right. But we focused on
that. Besides coffee, what was a surprise piece of feedback that you got?
The tracks. So yeah, the tracks, how we ran them. And I still think it's what people need and what they know they need, but it's not what they wanted. So what we did with tracks is we said, you know, and I'm a big believer when I coach businesses is like, what's your bottleneck and go fix that. Like, I think as a CEO, what fires we choose to let burn while we fix the big fire is something that matters a lot. I learned this as a firefighter when I was a volunteer, when I was like focus on the center point, like let's get that put out and then we can go. And so what the theory was is that we had these seven, you know, barriers in business, right? These seven bottlenecks. And that was each track, right? Sales was one, leadership was one, so on and so forth. And so attendee, what's your bottleneck? My bottleneck is sales. My bottleneck is lead gen. My bottleneck is operations. My bottleneck is recording. Cool. Go to that track. And you're going to spend every day, 2 hours of your day is going to be in that track. And it's not going to be 20 speakers in that track all talking different angles. It's going to be one curriculum. So Dr. Paul White, our mutual friend, led with Vinny Fisher one curriculum inside the leadership track. And I still believe that's the best strategy. I still believe. But team members just, they wanted to see other things. They wanted to experience other things. They wanted to, you know, move and groove. And so next year, we will still have the tracks, but it'll be, you'll be able to choose like, what do you want to go to that day? And what do you want to go to the next day? Right. Mm. The other thing that we learned with tracks, it's not surprising. Most of the things we, you know, wasn't, yeah, that makes sense, is that it was too broad. Right. So like we had a track on AI. We had seven. Next year, we're going to have 15 tracks. There's going to be one track on creating content with AI, another track on creating SOPs with AI, another track on sales with AI, another, you know, it's not going to be leadership track. It's going to be managing people track. You know, it's going to be a, you know, and then the other side of this is advanced and beginner. You know, again, we had a lead generation track. We had people in that room doing $5 million in revenue and $5 in revenue, right? And so very different conversation with those folks. So segmenting these tracks into both very specific topics and then also who are we talking to in that topic?
That's great learning. I mean, I think we all have to learn, and that changes over time. And you know that right. Probably from the events you've already done. You know, 10 years ago, the content that we created, the topics, the way it was delivered was different. And
that's right.
Because the audience has changed and the times have changed. So I think that's awesome. We need to bring this to a landing. So I'd love for you to give just kind of maybe one or two big lessons that you take away from this experience of launching your first event, something that you would share with somebody else that's thinking about, I'm not sure, should I launch an event or not? What would you share with them?
A couple things. Number one, events are really tough. They're really great, but they are really, really tough. Whatever you're thinking, it's going to be harder. And so partnering up with folks like yourself is like nil to none. Like that's my first event. I hired for my first three big events. We had someone like Phil right there beside us. I didn't know Phil at that time, but like right there beside us, holding our hands. You don't know what you don't know. And you will have a lot of mistakes in events that you just didn't even know happened. Number two, I would say just be, you know, I talked about it a couple of times, be very open and vulnerable. Like people are there. Your best customers that are going to be there are okay with faults. They're not looking for that. They're not looking for perfection. Your criticizers are never going to come back anyway. So don't be afraid to do things that empower your fans, right? Like standing up in the front of the room and going, hey guys, what do we fail at? Right. And so in the more direct feedback, now they're engaged. Now they're a part of the changes. Now they're the person like, I made the suggestion to JC last year to bring coffee. And look, it's here, guys. I'm the guy that did this. Right. And you're making them a part of the event. I think if you have help and you know, the Bible talks a lot about seeking wisdom. And both of these strategies are on that, seeking wisdom from people that have done it and then seeking wisdom from your attendees. And you're going to have that much more of an advantage.
I forgot this one other thing. I think this will be a tip for you to bring at the close here. You set a goal, I think, of 1,000 people in the room, and you had a break-even number. And I was listening to you and watching you as you were marketing, and there was a sense of, am I going to hit it? I mean, you had the confidence of a marketer that you were going to hit it, but then there's the reality, am I going to hit this number or not? Talk about those emotions, and maybe first, how did you set that number? And then second, what were you thinking and doing so that you could get to that break-even point?
As an entrepreneur, anybody who's listening to this that's an entrepreneur or any way, you know the roller coaster of emotions. The difference between a normal entrepreneur and an event person is there is an end date. Like it's over. Like it is a timeline. Any other business in the world, like if it takes you 10 years to really make it in roofing and make a lot of money, beautiful, right? But event isn't over. there's a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear, right? And, you know, we could talk through that a ton. You know, my goal was sustainable, not just for myself, but I was trying to create a system for the university to use at scale, right? And not only this university, but we're already now working on scaling this to other universities. So I was very adamant about that. To be quite frankly, we didn't quite hit our goal. We were $20,000 short. And I had a donor to Harding come in. I mean, like, this is just a beautiful thing. He came in the day afterward or the week afterwards, sat down with me and said, I heard you were 20 grand short. And he handed me a check.
Wow.
That I love what we're doing. I'm such a fan of this. Creating safe, everything you're doing, I believe in you. Let's go, you know? And that was huge, man. I like almost came to tears just because like that was the goal. Not that I didn't have the money to cover it and all this, but it's like, man, that was huge. And I think it just, again, goes through, right? Like we were, Karen and I let our hearts on everything we do. We want to be hospitable people. We want to love on people as much as possible. When you love on people, that will be reciprocated, you know, eventually, right? I heard someone say the other day a quote that I thought was really good. And it said, don't create permanent solutions for, how'd it go? Don't make a permanent solution for a short-term problem or something like that, right? And so like, don't change your character that affects you, you know, forever for just a small issue or a small problem. Don't make a big deal out of something so small. And so we pushed through it, but the emotional roller coaster was like nuts. It was crazy. And even at the event, like opening up, you're still like, one of the downsides to the event was we had hard seats, right? Like we were in a theater at the university, which means like in a normal room, ballroom style, it's like, oh, we have 800 people. Let's shrink the room to 800 and keep rolling. We couldn't do that. You know, there was 1,000 seats. So even though our original goal was like, we only had 750, which was incredible. I mean, that's not 750. Well, people networking, hanging out late to the room. There's only 600, 650 in the room. It looks half empty. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, but we overcame it. It was so cool. So amazing. We're going to shoot for 1,000 this year, oversell the room and make it happen.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that story. And I know we could probably spend a whole episode just on those emotions that go into it and how you calculate a number, but we're not going to do that. We are going to end with a signature sign-off moment here. So what I would love for you to do is give me three words that stand out to you from this conversation. At least one of them should be emotional.
Yeah. Emotional, humility, and wisdom, seeking wisdom.
All right. I love it.
Emotional, wisdom, humility.
Friend, thank you so much for being on the show. Let everybody know where they can find about you, about your event, where to follow you on social media. Tell us all the things.
Scale with Stability Summit, anywhere you want to go, you can find it. Follow me, JC Height, on Instagram, and you can find all of our stuff on Instagram there.
Well, JC Height, it has been a pleasure to have you on the show. I love considering you a friend. I love what you did. I'm glad for what you're going to continue doing in the world of events and for small businesses. So thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you, brother. Excited to be here.
Thanks for listening to the Event Innovator Show. Connect with Phil on philmachon.com and be sure to subscribe and never miss an episode.